It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the state DNR says people are throwing away too much food and recyclables. We'll find out how that waste can become a problem and how we can reduce our landfill footprint. First, a Texas law banning abortions after the sixth week of pregnancy is making the fight over access to abortions a top political issue in states around the country. Anti-abortion advocates have a new momentum after the U.S. Supreme Court allowed that law to take effect last week, though the court has not yet issued a final ruling on the law's constitutionality. And lawmakers in states around the country are starting to advance similar laws. It's the week in Washington. We'll talk about that story and more. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the Texas abortion law? Do you want to see other states implement something along those lines? Or do you want to see it turned around maybe in the courts? And do you want to see this, whichever side of the issue or no side you're on, do you think it should be a key issue, a bigger issue in the 2022 midterm elections? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Amanda Turkle is the Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, you've been talking to people in the abortion rights debate. What kind of things are you hearing about what Texas is going to mean for other states around the country?
Well, it's huge for the anti-abortion movement, and it has a lot of abortion rights advocates and providers really scared, because basically the Supreme Court has approved or essentially looked the other way at this Texas law, and it's going to provide a model now for other states to put in place similar laws, because that's how a lot of these anti-abortion laws spread, is one state is successful, and then you see copycat laws start to go up in other states. And so, you know, this will lead to other states trying to copy Texas, but it also just gives momentum for other states to move forward on other anti-abortion laws that they're trying to do, so-called trigger laws, where abortion bans go into place if Roe v. Wade is overturned, for example, other types of six-week bans. And it really, you know, the legislative sessions for most legislatures are out of session right now until 2022. And so that's when you're going to see a lot of this pick up.
One of the unique things about this Texas law isn't just the 6 week timeline here, banning abortions after that 6 weeks, but the enforcement, having citizens sue, in effect, bring suits and report to organizations that either perform abortions or that might, or individuals who aid a woman seeking an abortion. Are other states looking at that aspect of it as something that might pass the courts? Because the deal is state officials don't directly enforce this law.
Right. That's why this is so unique. It's meant, they wrote it in this very tricky way that makes it very hard to challenge legally. So you can't, as it doesn't technically criminalize abortion, it just bans abortions, and it doesn't go after the woman who is getting an abortion, but it goes after, you know, it could be a doctor, a driver, like a cab driver, or an Uber driver who drops the woman off at the clinic, maybe even a friend who helps her. And the intent is essentially to scare everyone, so that it becomes people become too afraid of lawsuits. And so the infrastructure of providing abortions just crumbles. And so Florida and Arkansas are already working on their own Texas style bills. But, you know, one thing that we've been reporting on since I'm in Washington is that it's been interesting that you would think something like this, that the anti-abortion movement considers such a victory, you didn't hear a lot from national Republicans cheering this law. Someone like Senator Ted Cruz or Senator John Cornyn, Texas's two Republican senators, Ted Cruz especially, you know, obviously a very outspoken social conservative, they were pretty quiet on this law. So they eventually put out statements, but they weren't sort of the victorious ones you would expect. And, you know, I think there's a few reasons for that. You know, we're not quite sure yet, but I think there is some concern that how could something like this Texas law be used in other ways? Could it be used to deputize private citizens to go after gun owners, or, you know, other types of things that Republicans might not like? And so the implications of this and how it spreads beyond abortion will be interesting to watch.
It's the week in Washington. We're looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Amanda Turkle with us this week from HuffPost. Right now, talking about the Texas abortion law, possible similar laws coming in states around the country. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. So my thoughts on the Texas abortion law. I personally feel that the Texas state Republicans, the state house there, I think they should be, you know, absolutely ashamed. I think this is a horrible law. Many doctors now in Texas are recommending that women there get pregnancy tests every 4 to 6 weeks. Because most women don't actually know they're pregnant that early on in the pregnancy. And if we look at the history of abortion in the country and abortion in other countries where it's historically been limited or illegal, all this really is going to accomplish is A, yeah, scare people, but B, it's going to make things more expensive. It's going to make things more dangerous for women in Texas. And it's probably, if it sticks around for long enough, it may even result in death.
Michael, thanks for the call. Getting some weird noise on your line there, but I think we take your point. Amanda, are these some of the concerns that we're hearing from pro-choice groups about the possible impact of this Texas law?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, this law, but also just this fear that the Supreme Court now with Amy Coney Barrett and this, you know, majority of conservatives will overturn Roe v. Wade. Many women and men remember what the country was like before Roe v. Wade and when you couldn't get abortions and when the procedure was incredibly dangerous because you had to do it in secret. It led to a lot of medical problems and it led to deaths. And that's what people are afraid of. And, you know, obviously there are some states now that have laws protecting the right to abortion, but not every state does. I thought the caller made an important point about this 6 week time period. Governor of Texas, Greg Abbott said, you know, look, you have 6 weeks to be able to get an abortion. We're not banning abortion, but many women don't even know that they're pregnant. By that 6 week point, you sort of have to be trying to get pregnant and checking all the time, and then you might catch it. But if you're not trying to get pregnant, you might not know, and then it's too late. And it's important to note too, that this abortion ban, does not provide exceptions for pregnancies that result from rape or incest. And, Abbott's other response to this was that, well, Texas will work tirelessly to make sure we eliminate all rapists from the streets of Texas, which I don't think provides women that much comfort. I think people have tried to get rid of rape, but, you know, that's not really the solution here.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Amanda, I know the midterm elections are 14 months away. There's no way to predict what the key issues are going to be, obviously, this far out. But that said, is there a thought that this Texas law and the Supreme Court, at least for now, letting it go ahead, shakes things up, moves abortion up, at least on the issue list for the upcoming elections?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to be closely watching abortion and how it plays. You know, it could, you know, I would expect that we will see Republican candidates be asked, you know, whether or not they support this Texas law. Democrats are obviously going to have to talk about abortion as well. And it will be interesting to see, you know, especially depending on what the Supreme Court does, you know, does this motivate Democrats or Republicans more to turn out and vote on the issue of abortion? And, you know, the midterm elections are a little bit away, but we do have this year in November, the Virginia state races. And the one that everyone's watching is the race for governor. And you have a Republican candidate there, Glenn Youngkin, who, you know, privately, and he was caught on video saying that he is all in and will go on offense if he's elected to stop abortion, but he just can't talk about it right now because he's trying to win over independents. And so something like this Texas law is really not something he wants to be talking about, and it will put him in an awkward place.
Let's go back to our callers now. John is with us in Appleton. John, hi.
Hi, thank you for letting me talk to you. I don't think people realize how frequent miscarriages are. We've had some in our family recently, and then you mention, and oh yeah, she did, and this doesn't just apply to those first 6 weeks. Any woman who has a pregnancy and all of a sudden the pregnancy is not there, people are going to say, aha, we will sue. Prove that you didn't have an abortion. And if you think it's something that's, I mean, it's a time of sorrow.
John, thanks for sharing that story. Sorry to hear about your experiences, but Amanda, has that concern been raised? A woman who has a miscarriage possibly being pursued, investigated to see whether it was in fact an abortion?
Yes. People under the Texas law receive incentives, financial incentives, to go after and sort of to sue, people who help a woman get an abortion. And these could be completely frivolous lawsuits. The people who are doing the suing don't actually even have to live in Texas. But it doesn't matter if their suit is dismissed, if it's a frivolous lawsuit, there's no penalty for these people, and the other side doesn't get any damages. And so it's entirely tilted in favor of ordinary random people who oppose abortion just bringing suits. And again, you could do that to harass someone. You could do it in a time of great pain for someone. It doesn't really matter. And it could, obviously the potential here for problems is great.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, with us for our weekly roundup of the top political stories in Washington. Coming up, we'll hear from a couple more of you about this Texas abortion law. We'll move on then to some other topics, including prescription medicine prices and letting Medicare negotiate prescription drug costs. You can join in on at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our Week in Washington conversation with Amanda Turkle from HuffPost, looking at some of the top stories in national news. Back to a couple more of your calls on the Texas abortion law, what it means for the country. Let's go to Wendy now in Neenah. Wendy, hi.
Rob, thanks for covering this topic, Rob. First of all, thank you to all the men who have called in. They've had some very good points as far as this being a women's reproductive health problem. With the law enacted across our country, they are making it harder and harder for women to take care of their health. I'd also like to point out, most women, that's not your first choice, is to have an abortion. The best way to prevent abortion is to have affordable birth control. And I guess that's all I wanted to point out.
Wendy, thanks for the call. Wendy's sharing her opinion there and wanting some focus on things like affordable birth control, Amanda.
Yes, and I think another thing that is, often doesn't get talked about is that, if you want to incur, the women who get abortions are often low income and women of color. And if they decide to or are forced to keep the child, there aren't always the services in place to help them, to provide that child with a healthy life, social services, food assistance, whatever it is, those aren't in place. And that's not something that Texas is expanding right now, which people say, if you're really interested in making sure, if you're really pro-life, and if you're really interested in making sure that these babies have a healthy, fulfilling life, this is something you need to be doing as well.
Thanks for the call. We'll take one more call on the issue. Ron is with us in Madison. Ron, hi.
Hey, how are you doing today? Thanks for taking my call. It's an interesting topic, and first I can say that while it may not sound like it, I don't believe that my feelings on this subject are outliers. I think that more people believe the way I do. I am pro-choice and anti-abortion simultaneously. People like us don't usually speak up about this, but I believe it's a woman's right to choose, but I also am anti-abortion. I also agree completely. Using this type of law and with the enforcement capabilities that they're doing in Texas, allowing private citizens basically to act as police and bring suit and bring reporting, is just opening up a can of worms that nobody really wants to go to. On the other hand, I am interested because, conversely, nobody ever talks about this from a pro-choice standpoint. If 6 weeks is not enough time, what is enough time?
Ron, thanks a lot for the call. And Amanda, legislatures and courts have set deadlines later than that six-week time period, right, that have, I believe, passed constitutional muster.
Right, exactly. Viability usually at about 7 months, 28 weeks, 24 weeks. You know, it's 6 weeks is far less than that. I think you have some people who argue that, you know, it should be completely left up to women to decide this. But, you know, 6 weeks, this is the strictest law in the nation. There have been other legislatures that have tried to get at 6 week bans, but none of them have gone into effect. Courts have stopped them. They haven't made it all the way through the legislature. This is the first one that's actually gone into effect because it had a willing Supreme Court and it had this this sort of legal runaround. But, you know, what the caller was saying, too, and it gets back to something the previous caller was saying, you know, this is abortion is not the first choice for many women. Although, you know, if it is, like, it's their choice. But, you know, this is a tough decision that a woman makes with her family, with her doctor. And, you know, people, you know, a majority of people think in the country support access to some sort of abortion. What the Texas ban does, despite what Greg Abbott says, a six-week ban is essentially a full ban for many women.
Thanks for the call, Ron. We're talking to Amanda Turkle from HuffPost, looking at some top stories in national politics. Want to move on to a couple other issues, Amanda. This effort in Congress now to enable Medicare to negotiate prescription drug costs with drug companies. People have been talking about this for a long time. Some of your colleagues reported on a unique effort to stop that from drug companies and labor groups. What's going on?
Yeah. So first of all, it's called HR3. That's the legislation. This is something Joe Biden has said is a central part of his agenda. He's committed to passing it. And it's something that has support from a majority of Americans. I saw some recent poll, 81%, that includes a majority of Republicans, Democrats, and independents. So this is something that's widely popular. You know, I think if you ask most people, do you want lower prescription drug prices, they'll say yes. But there are these ads running right now that's urging people to vote against it, saying it will cost America thousands of jobs and stifle innovation. And it's being run by this advocacy group, the Pharmaceutical Industry Labor Management Association. It's a group of the pharmaceutical industry and a group of unions. And they are running these ads, asking their member of Congress to oppose this. And so we reported on this effort because I don't think a lot of people realizing unions, which are often considered more democratic, are teaming up with the pharmaceutical industry. Some of these unions, when we reached out to them, said that they didn't actually seem to know about this yet. And they said that they didn't support it. Others didn't have any comment. But I think one thing it shows is that, you know, there are differences in the labor movement. There are unions that are more that are sort of more liberal, and there are ones that are the building trades unions, which often tend to be a little bit more conservative and place more emphasis on, you know, we will support the industry that is providing us jobs, even if it means, you know, giving in on something like this. But coming out against this big pillar of Biden's agenda is a pretty big step forward, even for these unions.
Let's give a listen to part of one of those ads.
Skilled union workers and scientists came together to develop vaccines and defeat COVID-19. But bad policy proposals like HR3 and similar provisions being considered in the U.S. Senate will put their jobs in jeopardy. It will cost America thousands of jobs, stifle innovation and discovery of new medicines, and put barriers between patients and their medications.
And that's the typical argument from pharmaceutical companies against this kind of law. But the labor angle, these are building trades people who, I guess, build the facilities that the pharmacy companies are researching in. Is that the connecting the dots here?
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
So how big a stumbling block is it to have even part of the labor movement for the Biden administration? Is it to have part of the labor movement trying to block this?
It's not ideal, especially because, you know, Joe Biden has been such a big friend of labor. You know, one of the unions on the board of this group is the International Association of Firefighters. They have been big Biden supporters and were during his campaign. So, you know, this isn't great for Biden, this look that some of these unions are opposing him. But like I said, we talked to some of these groups and they were, they said that they didn't really support this. They didn't know about it. So it's not clear if they're going to fight very hard for this, whereas obviously the pharmaceutical industry will. And like you said, this is something we hear from the pharmaceutical industry all the time, that this is going to cost jobs. This is going to hurt innovation. You know, the American people are the ones who are ultimately going to lose out. And the pharmaceutical industry has huge lobbying power in Washington. And so they're going to be spending a lot of money to defeat this. And whereas I don't think the unions ultimately will probably be putting all their muscle behind it.
And just in our last minute, you've been following the question of which states are going to accept Afghan refugees under the special immigrant visa program for Afghans who worked with the U.S. over the last 20 years. What are you seeing from states?
So we surveyed all the states and we heard back from almost all of them. 37 states had told us they were willing to take in refugees. Two said they weren't, and then the rest, 11, said didn't give us a response. And so the two that aren't going to are Wyoming and South Dakota. They said they have no interest in taking refugees. Of the 37 who will, you know, some of them said, sure, we'll take them if the federal government tells us we have to. But there were others that, you know, obviously who, you know, and we've heard about some of these states said, you know, we will welcome these people with open arms. They helped the U.S. efforts in Afghanistan. You know, they're welcome to come to our states. And that includes both Republican and Democratic governors have said that. And, you know, one thing to note is that this is a huge difference from when Obama in 2015, he wanted to settle 10,000 refugees from Syria's civil war in the United States. The GOP members of Congress tried to ban that, and 30 governors said that the refugees would not be welcome. And so, you know, there's a lot more support for resettling the Afghan refugees.
Amanda, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Great. Thank you.
That's Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, with us for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics.